You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director at pa@wrct.org or by calling 412-621-0728. Live from WRCT Studios in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Hour, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Total Education Hour time, and I hope time has not passed and that the ninth year going into the, probably the 10th year on radio, I guess it'll be 9 years in on December. Will I still be doing the Total Education Hour? I might be doing it, but will I be doing it in the format we're doing it today? Always bringing these things up, not saying anything bad about my flagship station, but I just don't know in my journey and where I'll be and what will happen. It all will depend on WRCT. It will all depend on specific things, but the show must go on. I need a show tonight, so I'm ready to go, especially for the flu last week. Wow, that really hit me rock bottom, and now I'm back. And I remember our Total Education Hour a couple of weeks ago was very interesting, and we were waiting on Jared, and Jared did not call. He's been, where has he been? Will he ever come? But I want to welcome the program, Peter Alvich. Peter, how are you? When will Jared join? I think he joined once, but when will he come back? Jason takes his leaves and comes back, but Jared, anytime I don't want to do the show, Jared wants to come on. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, that's something I've noticed. Is like it's been like a flip flop and all that craziness. But
yeah, your percentage of times coming on too late at night has not been the particularly one. I have a cup of coffee in my hand. I'm ready to go from 11 to 12. What education news we'll have? Who knows? Let's kind of jump to it.
Yep.
And see what we can find and bring and take out there. I don't think there's anything I would say particularly, except we all know Donald Trump always has some news. Betsy DeVos always has some news. But what's the hottest education news right now? Who knows? Especially when there's some sort of a semblance. Let's go jumping, I guess, to our good friends over at the New York Times first. No, I'm checking to see if I have anything else. Educationnews.org is number one now. Education News. I mean, edweek.org is number one on Google now. Spending that money, using that union money. All right, colleges grapple with teacher prep standards. This is a great topic to start out with. And here, the conversation I had with one of my clients today, Susan Colton, great principal. She came on a couple weeks ago, or I guess it was a month ago. The conversation I have is we're going to throw teachers right into the building without any education courses. It's going to be a big mistake because we have a teacher shortage, and I would probably be smiling today unless I knew what was happening when I first started in teaching X amount of years ago. Let's see, September 11th, 2000, and it's now the 2019, September 11th. Holy cow. 19 years when I stepped into a classroom. And have gone through the measures of having a tutoring business, I guess, for 17 years. Can't believe that. Time flies. And I wouldn't even have thought of that. But to think about those things, when the first time I ever tutored anyone was probably 18 years ago. That education's gone through just a terrible, terrible, terrible process to now where we don't need to education courses, which I don't agree. You can't throw people in just based on their knowledge base, Peter. You can't just say, hey, because they know math, science, they're going to be great classroom teachers, Peter. That's, I guess, we're going to get in this conversation about 5 years, a bold set of teacher prep standards. Well, what the heck? where have we gone? And now, Peter, mm-hmm. I'm feeling old. 19 years? I've been in education 19, and I'm talking about the beginning of the show. Am I going to be out at 19 years? Is it time for me to move on to greener pastures? But this is very a big concern of mine, training mm-hmm. teachers. Do you agree with me that we need teacher prep courses? And if, you know, teachers come straight out of the classroom, I mean, come straight out of just their knowledge base and just put them in a classroom and throw them in and say, good luck to you. Is that really going to work?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. Is definitely having prep and definitely having some structure behind, you know, just the knowledge base is 100% how it should be. I mean, not only should teachers be prepared, you know, from their knowledge base, but also should be prepared from, you know, experience and preparation base. You know, of course, a lot of people will say, you know, obviously, as you said, you know, we have a shortage and, you know, we really need to get teachers out there. But it's really about doing it right, not doing it half-wise. Because, I mean, if we do it half-ways and we just start putting teachers in the classroom, we're doing a disservice to our students where we're giving them, you know, a partial education. We need to make sure that teachers are not only good from their knowledge bases, but also have gone through necessary preparations to, you know, not only feel comfortable in the classroom, but to also, you know, delegate and be an instructor in a classroom and feel comfortable.
Yeah, no, most definitely. And the preparation, it's so important. Let me just tell you, I've taken mm-hmm. what I've learned in education to become an entrepreneur. In the ability to understand people, before my formation in pro wrestling as a pro wrestler and then as a teacher, I could not understand my customer. I could not understand the people that I'm trying to present to without those two experiences in my life. So to think that mm-hmm. you could throw someone in front of 30 people and make sure that they're engaged, excited, and understand, and think that, oh, you don't need teacher prep mm-hmm. courses to do it, forget about it. It's not going to work. It's going to backfire in so many ways. And we're going to be sitting here with teachers that yeah. can't communicate, can't develop, can't do anything. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean. Let's make you a scenario right now, Peter. You're going ahead mm-hmm. and being thrown into a classroom to teach. I don't know who you're teaching, but if let's say you decided that you're going to go and teach for the state of Minnesota in the classrooms K-12, and you're going to teach technology, but really focus on a special needs environment. Do you feel you need more pedagogy and teaching to be thrown into a classroom to teach young children or even high school students?
So, yeah, I mean, in my personal standpoint, even though I'm very knowledgeable, I have technology background, things like that, I still feel personally that, you know, in a teaching standpoint that I'm, you know, still unqualified, that although I have some of the skills that teachers, you know, need, or, you know, communication and things like that, there's still a lot of things, you know, for instance, you know, for different grade levels that I don't have experience in. So for me personally, I know I definitely would need that extra preparation or extra schooling, you know, to get to that particular level. You know, for me right now, the way that I'm teaching with the state of Minnesota right now is I'm not teaching grade levels, but I'm teaching community side, where, you know, basically people can come in, they pay for the classes and things like that. And that has been going fantastic. I've got nothing but good reviews. But if we're talking about like teaching like a younger generation, because I'm teaching more so of like middle to older age, you know, I feel like personally I would need more preparation to make sure that, you know, what I've known thus far is accurate to project to students or to communicate with students, you know, a lot better. Because obviously we all can continue to learn, but we, you know, in my particular standpoint, I can't really just go off of, you know, okay, you know, I have the skills that I have, I'm going straight in there, because, you know, that's just, there's more that needs to be done, in my opinion.
That's such a great point. Pedagogy to teach kids that developing minds that are not very engaged. It's very tough to get them to understand things. You can't go ahead and tell somebody without any pedagogy, meaning teaching knowledge of how to teach that population of K through 12 to understand material, because it's a process. It's not something, oh yeah, here you go, you can do this, it's simple, and they'll all listen. When you're teaching adults, you're going to have adults that really understand how to learn, have learned their lives, and they're there for a reason to learn. When you're teaching K through 12, they're forced to be there. So you better be able to engage them, because they could choose just not to pay attention at all. Even a college professor could deal with that. And I don't know why we don't have certifications for college teachers. That would be something to bring up in certain ways, because they absolutely, some of them can't teach worth a darn. And this is continues to be the process and problem, Peter, that there are a lot of professors out there that don't see their job for to teach kids to understand things. And at that young age, you're still, they're developing even at that age. To 21, that brain and understanding and having the motivation to learn. So I think that they maybe we should consider having to certify certify college teachers, especially not as much pedagogy, not as much their knowledge base, but their teacher understanding. Peter, your thoughts. And then we're going to go right into more of this article.
Well, yeah, you know, I definitely, you know, believe, I mean, you've got definitely a foundation if you're going into teaching. I mean, you have some sort of background in what you're trying to do, but you need to create, you know, a little bit more of a knowledge base when going into teaching. So, I mean, for college teachers, college professors, I think it would be, you know, a preference to have, you know, certification, because, you know, then we know that what they're teaching and being able to teach is accurate. Well, and I'll put it loosely as acceptable and as communicative as possible to students and to, you know, collective staff. That would be better. You know, will it be, you know, a little bit more training or things like that? Yes, but in my personal opinion, even as teachers, you know, we're all continuously learning. And I think it could only benefit a teacher further that if, even if they have a foundation where they're going into teaching, so, you know, the prep and certification classes are going to continuously benefit ongoing, you know, not only education for themselves, but education to their students.
All right. So we get back. We're going to go into the article a little bit. Look at specifically enough why they're trying to raise the standards on teacher education and figuring out how to certify teachers. But all I believe the most important thing in the certification process is for them to learn how people learn. It's so important when I explain things to people, training them in a variety of different ways, teaching, checking for understanding, going back over and over again, modeling it one more time till they have it completely understood. That's key. And that's why I am one of the best in the business in teaching. And we're talking teaching not in the classroom, but in the real world and life. So when we get back, more Toll Education Hour. You're listening to the Toll Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org. Hashtag WRCT. We'll get back. Peter Elvidge and myself continue the conversation here on the Toll Education Hour. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. And again, my monologue to talk about, will I have an education show or that's primarily education going into the 10th year on radio for education? Will I be in education at all in the 19 years? One of the decisions I've made, and I hope I can bring that up, is that I am probably no longer going to tutor except online. The businesses have gotten too busy, my celebrity status or whatever, so I've decided to go straight online. Love to continue this show. Love WRCT. Love this education show, especially when I don't have to really think as much as I have to think with other things. So, Peter Elvidge, let's go just jump into it. And again, checking for understanding and looking at the particulares. I'm looking to see All right, which thing I have opened up and I do. All right, Dateline, 5 years, a bold set of teacher prep standards still faces challenges. Okay, I think it's, well, and why is it not moving? Oh, great. That's always a nice thing. I'll read some of it. It's been 5 years since this week, since the teacher preparation landscape is shaken up with the adoption of standards for accreditation that focuses on evidence and outcomes, and teacher training programs are feeling the ripple of effects. The Council for Accreditation of Education Preparation, and I don't know why we're not moving, which was created by, in 2010, merger between two national accreditation bodies, officially approved its new standards on August 29th, 2013. Since then, the teacher prep programs seeking accreditation have worked to meet more rigorous standards, including ones that created minimum criteria for teacher candidates' academic achievements and forced institutions to demonstrate graduates' impact in the classrooms where ended up working. All right, so that's as far as I'm going in this, Peter, because it's not letting me. I'm trying to refresh and see if the refresh will help me. But thinking about that, it faces challenge. Okay, now we're not frozen anymore. In the period of time, it's been a very complex and challenging road to implement the standards, and that's in part because the standards are very ambitious and they take accreditation in a new way, said Mary Barbeck, whatever, member of the CAEP's board of directors with the chairwoman of the board. Indeed, the path has been with a lot of roadblocks. It has been significant international leadership churn. The group has been revised in one standard candidate's GPA requirements because of the enormous pushback from the field. The external pressures on the institutions are mounting. And then there's a video. All right, it looks like we'll keep going. Reality on the ground, CEP started requiring all programs seeking accreditation to meet its standards in fall 2016. I mean, this just seems like a lot of paperwork, Peter. Doesn't look like there's anything exciting about this or groundbreaking.
Basically what I'm gathering from this is that for teachers going into the field, they need to have basically more proof and more educational accreditation. But because I think we're focusing on this so very heavily, like you said, the communication aspect of it or learning how people learn is very important. And I think that's something that's definitely getting lost here. I mean, taking one of the classes that I did when I was in one of my college classes, it was during talking about psychology and how we learned, how there was different, you know, there was, you know, listening, there was viewing, there was hands-on, all these different things. And I'm even experiencing that today with, you know, the classes that I'm teaching. And there, you know, I can definitely see there are very intelligent and very knowledgeable teachers that communicate and can, you know, so to speak, switch from one person's learning style to another versus as other teachers that kind of generalize, and that's where they kind of start losing students. I think that although it's good, you know, okay, you know, we have better standards, but the question is, are we ultimately blocking out communication, those important connections to the student and teacher, so that we can have, you know, we can say, okay, our teacher has, you know, a really huge knowledge base, but doesn't know how to use it. You know, that's going to be kind of a problem, because if we can have a huge knowledge base, but we can't project it to our students, what's the sense of really learning that extra stuff? You're not going to project it to people.
Exactly. So I don't like the article. It really doesn't explain anything, and I don't feel like reading it for our listeners. So let's move on. College Grapple, we talked about this. Gates Foundation launches strategy to improve schools. Okay, well, are you kidding me? Let's hear what Mr. Gates has now. With $92 million in grants, Gates Foundation launches newest strategy to improve K-12 schools. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced more than $90 million in grants to support networks of schools to work to help students of color and low-income students in college, marking its first major wave of K-12 giving since announcing a significant change in direction last fall. The 19 grants announced today will support improvements in everything from middle school language arts to perennially thorny problem of Algebra 1 to solve the problem of undermatching when high-achieving, low-income students select colleges that are less ambitious or rigorous. Interesting. Looks like now he's looking less in test scores and more about just helping the root of the problem where the kids need it the most and where kids need the most money, meaning the districts need it. And that's the lower-income districts, Peter. So that's a good step instead of some of the other education programs that the U.S. government has put together or even Bill and Melinda Gates have put together, because they're finally, instead of looking at achievement, they're looking at the root of the problem in urban education, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. It definitely helps to really get more strength into lower income oriented places, you know, to people who definitely need it, to different demographics. It's definitely a very positive thing because I with the changes of, like, you know, we're looking at education, we're trying to have more choice and things like that, you know, being able to get, you know, some assistance or get some type of money from the government to, you know, do this college or do schooling is definitely going to help more students have more access. And I guess if we're going to have even more choice, at least people will be able to have access to something potentially helpful to them in the future. If we're looking at more so privatized schools, but that's a totally different subject. By that, I just put that out there just for general knowledge.
Yeah, but I like this idea. This is really, instead of saying, well, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you keep doing what you're doing. Yeah. Nothing's going to change. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you got to take a little step out of the
Yeah, you got to look. You got to look at what they've done, how they've done it, and how it needs to improve. That's that simple. It's not that difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science to fix education, but the schools that perform the best have the most money. And when people figure that mm-hmm. out, life is easier because, oh my gosh, that's what we got to do. We got to help those schools. I always said I can mm-hmm. increase the test score numbers for the lower income school districts by providing after school tutoring programs that really focus on that and continue to provide the extra time that these kids at the youngest age need because they're behind based on their environment. So that's the way, but you pour a bunch of money in and it's just going to be in the classroom. I think it's a mistake. You got to look at after school tutoring programs.
Mm-hmm.
You got to look at what a free and reduced lunch increments. You got to look at specifically other areas to enrich them. You can't just decide I'm just going to pour some more money into some smart boards at these districts. They really have to come up mm-hmm. with some out of the box ways to have success.
Yeah, and the important thing is, you know, like you're saying, is the more that we invest in some of these, like, out of, like, classroom type, like, tutoring programs, things like that, where people can get, like, individualized help, or maybe, you know, for instance, as a previous conversation, maybe the teacher's being, you know, too generalistic in their class, and they need someone who will, you know, so to speak, dissect them and figure out how they particularly learn and work with them individually. And then on top of this, too, I mean, a lot of tutors, like I've had people who I've worked with who have also, you know, we've sparked the conversation between, you know, tutor and teacher as well as student, and to really convey, you know, how does the student learn?
Yeah, most definitely. We got to look at all those areas, Peter, for sure, in the process. So let's look at, see what Bill and Melinda are doing. I think it's great what Bill and Melinda are doing, Peter. And it's a good start. So let's move on to our next topic as I'm looking at the good old news and good news. Again, we've gone to one that is okay, but now I think it's time to kind of get some crazy news going, right? Let's go to our good old friends over at the New York Times, see what they have to offer us for a second before we're looking. Mm-hmm. Go, Peter.
I did think of a particular thing that I saw on Facebook as an interesting thought, if you're interested.
We'll see if we find it. Then we can save that for next week, too. Asbestos and crayon,
all right.
Bezonine and marker, a school supply studies toxic results. Okay. Everything's going to harm us, Peter. I'm tired of this. When we go out and breathe the air, It's we go out to our outside our house, inside our house, anywhere we're at, it's harmful in some sort of way. Are we just going to start wearing, going to be like the bubble person from Seinfeld and put ourselves all in bubbles? Maybe I should, that's the new money maker I can make. I could create walking bubbles and everyone could walk inside a bubble and I'll become a multi-millionaire, billionaire, because everyone is in a bubble because we're afraid of germs. I'm going to read about this, but I just think that we're jumping to conclusions when I've gone through all this stuff and I'm fine. And, oh, it might cut a couple years off. Then we have to create the bubble. Peter, this is crazy. Asbestos and crayons and markers. It's just all toxic results. Forget about it. These kids shouldn't have anything. Your thoughts, Peter?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's crazy. There's a lot of, you know, chemicals, things everywhere. You know, I mean, we have technology. We have all this different stuff. You know, it's... We live in a world where, you know, you have to take a step out your front door and you're going to be exposed to just about everything. And the point is how you handle it. I mean, if people really want to be that concerned, then I guess, you know, just let them be concerned. But ultimately, you know, we're surrounded by hazards all the time. I mean, we go to our houses and we plug in electronics every night to charge our phones and, you know, our phones themselves. I mean, not to freak anybody out, but they just have tons of possible, you know, issues with them. And I mean, it's just like, you just, you know, you have to go with the flow. You have to live life. Otherwise you're going to be so scared to even go outside of your own house. You're going to be stuck, you know, in one place. So, but on this particular point though, I definitely recommend that if, you know, if we're talking about like minimizing, you know, the contact of like, for instance, color crayons, markers, whatever it is, use something digital then if you feel more comfortable that way. Or if you feel like digital electronics are an issue, well, then, you know, your answer.
Here's my point, and I agree with you, which is, I think, really crazy, is we're running into a situation where everything, as I said, was harmful for you. And we're okay, let's go ahead and decrease the toxicity of certain things. Is that going to change anything? Are we just afraid? They all got to go get their bubbles, Peter. I'm telling you, the bubble is the next big thing. Purchase your bubble today. Everyone can walk around in a bubble, and because we're just too toxic. Well, so that, I think I'm going to read the article and see if anything. I'm so scared now and really concerned. Okay. Dateline, August 8th, 2018, a public interest group said this week that it's found toxic substances in a number of school supplies, including asbestos in play school crayon and another carcinogen became in dry erase markers. Let's go. Remember, we got to sniff them. Studies were detailed in a report published Tuesday by a group, the United States Public Interest Research Group Education Fund, which had an independent laboratory test 27 back-to-back products. Four tested positive for dangerous chemicals. It's insane for us to be finding asbestos in kids' products. Well, what about Cheerios? Aren't we eating? What are they? No, so I could go into this craziness and say any food that's cheap is dangerous. So we're killing everybody if we don't have money to buy expensive food. Well, the same thing can come with these products. Mm-hmm. But how many people have been eating Cheerios for years and years and years and there's not been any adverse effects? Just because laboratory rats. Come on now. Okay. So it's insane for us to finding asbestos in kid products, whether it's technically legal or not. Parents shouldn't have to worry about this in 2018, says Dev Goda, an author of the report, which directs the group's campaign to persuade manufacturers to drop toxic substances from their personal care products. We wish that we didn't have to study like this. Okay, and again, they could be lobbyists as well. The group tested crayons, markers, binders, water bottles, lunch boxes, notebooks, rulers, and glue. And, you know, glue is the best thing to sniff, Peter. The products were purchased nationwide at a variety of businesses, including box stores, dollar stores, pharmacies, arts and crafts stores, and online. The group, which had surveyed toys for more than three decades, recommended that the companies that make or offer the products stop selling them and start notifying consumers about the chemicals they appear to contain. It is called in policymakers to continue to support the Consumer Product Safety Commission. All right, so I don't know. I mean, okay, big deal. So how toxic was it, Peter? How much should we be concerned about it? All that stuff. Go ahead.
Well, it's like, I'll put it this way, okay? My first point is, how much more explicit can they be of actual, you know, like makings of the makeup and things like that? All that information is actually public access for the most part. You know what I mean? For instance, color crayons and things like that, markers. I mean, there's labels on packaging. There's information on so many different pages. So that's my first thing. It isn't like nobody knows this stuff is harmful in some ways. It's just, you know, really, if you really are concerned about it, just don't buy it. If we're going to make an article and we're going to say, you know, we need to tell everyone about every little single thing that's in, like, for instance, the color crayon. Well, I mean, are we going to do this for every single product we put out there? I mean, it's going to be so much red tape. There's going to be so much stuff. It's going to go out of control and crazy. But I just, you know, for when you go and you see these products, for instance, like, okay, let's say you see this article and you're like, well, oh, crap, you know, crayons are, you know, dangerous, markers are dangerous, things like that. Well, of course everything is dangerous. If you use it the wrong way, it's going to be dangerous. So, I mean, if you don't want it, don't buy it. Otherwise, I mean, don't worry about it. If you have been using color crayons for the longest time, you haven't experienced any issues, then you're fine. And the second thing is, too, is really, we're looking at the asbestos in the particular items, right? Is it such a significant amount where it's, you know, deadly or harmful to a human? I highly doubt it, because we would have seen numerous of cases since the arrival of these materials. I'm not saying that there hasn't been, but if it was such a significant amount where we should really be making a public notice about it, about the products, we would have heard about it long by now. So in my opinion, yes, it might be in there, but is it really a harmful amount? Probably not.
Yeah, what is harmful? And remember, the Cheerios are dangerous. We're poisoning kids, remember. Whenever we have Cheerios, whenever we have any of these things in these products, they're killing us. Remember that, Peter. I mean, you can taste the poison when you test. You do it. You can taste it.
Well, it's like, you know, Cheerios. I mean, gosh, yeah, okay. You know, they have all sorts of different stuff in them. And to be honest, the label on the box, hi, here's all of our ingredients. I mean, are they all necessarily the best for you? No, I can't guarantee that. But it depends on if you put it in your shopping cart or not. You put it in your shopping cart, well, then you can either decide to be concerned about it, or you can be on.
Come
your way.
On now, you're a fan of Monsanto. They're the best, right?
Oh man, it's crazy, man. It's crazy.
But remember, the bubble is the way. Okay, move out of education. I mean,
yep.
No, I just said move out of education. We're on an education show today. Okay, move out of education. Okay, we're going to NPR. Moving out of the New York Times, because I want to get something. It's showing up nothing. What the heck? Okay, that really didn't link to anything. All right, let's go to Washington Post. Education Department considers greater rights for students accused of sexual assault, officials say. And Betsy Liz Voss is right there wanting to happen. William & Mary calls for a memorial to enslaved people who helped build the school. Okay. Student arrested for snatching classmates MAGA hat and slapping teacher, police say. Like that article, Peter. We got to go to it.
Okay.
Make America great again hat. Okay, so that's MAGA. So remember that. I know, Peter, you have your Make America Great Again hat. You're ready to start wearing it again. It's when you go to teach your students, you wear that hat. Right?
Yeah, right. Oh, God, it's crazy. So what is this, like a political thing, or is this like a
This is the Washington Post. Okay. All right, so here we go. So remember, students arrested for snatching classmates' Make American Great hat and slapping teacher, police say. Okay. Profanities flew in the classroom, and okay. So did the hat. Something about President Trump's slogan incensed a California high school student on Monday. She yelled at the classmate in English class who was wearing a hat emblazoned with Make America Great Again and threw it at the ground, authorities said. The teacher banished her from the class at Union Mine High School in El Dorado, but she returned and snatched the hat a second time. She slapped the teacher's arm away when he tried to keep her from the other student, authorities said. She appears to curse in cell phone video filmed by a student and published by local media. The student was arrested on campus by a school resource officer and taken to a juvenile detention center. Authorities did not release her name, but CBS Sacramento identified the student as Joanne Butler, a 17-year-old senior. She defended her actions in an interview with the station. That's racist and a hateful symbol, Butler, who has suspended her from school for a week and faces potential battery charges. Okay, Peter, the hat is not a racial... Okay, just because...
Yeah.
The person does it sometimes. That's not his mantra. That's not what he does 24/7. This person should have the right to wear the hat.
Yeah. So I got a couple of points here. For one, if you're 17 years old, although you're still growing and you're really, trying to figure things out in life, I'm almost pretty certain that you're in control of at least some of your faculties. And then you understand that, if people decide to wear things, then that's just how they are. Of course, I've been through high school, so I know that, some people are like, I don't agree with them. So obviously stuff like this happens. In the case of the hat, yeah, if they wear it, fine. Although I personally don't agree either. I would not do that in that scenario. It'd just be like, okay, fine, they're wearing a hat. I wouldn't. That's fine with me. That's exactly why we are in America, so that people have that choice whether to wear it or not. When we have, when we have this confrontation, for instance, where one symbol, for instance, a hat is, and a person is treated like this, instead of like bridging a gap to like understanding, we just like boom, we cut it in half, and people are on two different sides. And I think that when we are really looking at, particularly today, and when people are wondering, why are we so divided at times? This is particularly it. I mean, it's a hat. Deal with it. It's fine. You don't like it? That's, that's okay. But if you can't handle yourself and this happens, reactions need to happen. You did something to another student. You did something to a teacher. And, things need to happen.
Exactly. Craziness. And then I love the topics that slap the teacher. It just slapped the teacher's arm. I was thinking, oh, my gosh, the student slapped her. And oh, goodness. Okay, let's go to another article. Mm-hmm. Education department released incorrect school shooting data without checking for errors. All right, I can't wait for this one.
Oh,
and that
God.
Involves Betsy DeVos. You knew it. I'm not surprised by that,
mm-hmm.
right, Peter? Yeah. I think so. So when we get back, we're going to take a quick break. So we're going to just keep going. You're listening to Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. We'll be back, Peter Elvidge and myself, Neil Haley. We'll be back in just a moment. We are back to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT, Peter Elvidge and I. Okay, Peter, you cannot ever wear your MAGA hat to the studio again. Never again can you wear that MAGA hat. So everyone remember, MAGA is Make America Great Again. Period. That's going to be his new one.
Oh, man.
MAGPA. That's going to be his new saying.
Are they red, too?
Yes, so they're red. Make America Great Again. Period. That is going to be the new mantra for the next election. I should just tweet that to President Trump right now. Make America Great Again, period. That's the new saying. Okay. But we'll see. We'll continue to see if anybody wants to wear the hat that is heard all over the world. But let's continue. Education Department released incorrect school data, shooting data, without checking for errors. And they have a picture of Betsy DeVos. So, Peter, let's see what happens. Why does the Safari keep doing this? Because it's Safari. Since 1968, okay, everyone, they want to not identify anything that works in Safari. In 1968, the U.S. Department of Education has conducted what is known as the Civil Rights Data Collection, which is an attempt to look at how the nation's public schools are addressing key education and civil rights issues. In most recent public release of data, it turns out the department published incorrect information related to school shootings, but it's not planning to correct the report. This spring, the U.S. Education Department reported that in 2015-2016 school year, okay, if you're going to keep doing this, I'm going to get mad. But NPR reached out to each one of the schools repeatedly over the course of the 3 months and found that more than two-thirds of these reported incidents never happened. So, lying about school issues, school incidents. So that the incident involving school-related shootings. So that's just so the teachers get guns, right?
Yeah. So this is, I could see many different angles on this. And the first thing is, why in the heck? I mean, we're as public officials and things, we're talking about that we want to stop, shootings and things like that. But then we publish, data that we haven't double checked so that we could, manage it accurately. That's the first thing. Second thing is I don't want to, be like conspiracy theorist, but is there a possibility that this data was published with, quote unquote, not checked for errors because they wanted to influence the public in some fashion? That might be a way too. I don't know. I can't prove anything, but in my opinion, is when we're talking about shootings and things like that and taking care of this data, this should be something that we double, if not triple check before we put this out there. Because if we're going to take care of it accurately, we need to do it accurately to begin with. And if that takes a couple of times to double check, then, that's how important it is to the public. I mean, it should be important to those who administrate it as well. I mean, it only makes sense.
Yeah, so the data is just so that they can get guns in schools so teachers can carry guns. And the more it says there's violence, the more likely they're going to do this. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I figure too that, the whole, we accidentally, published data that wasn't, reviewed over. It's because the reason why they're saying that because it wasn't reviewed, to make sure it was accuracy is a lot better than saying, we just published it because we wanted it this way. So ultimately I'm seeing that as well a, the safest way to get out of it, at least if the intention is to that they're connected to some sort of place for profit and they're trying to get out of being public exposed. Yes, we did this intentionally.
Right. Okay. Our good friends at Fox News, please no videos. There's going to be videos. So we might have to go to the topic because they have videos for everything. And every site needs to be identified, it looks like, Peter, is illegal. Male student sues Brown University. Oh, goodness, don't start this. That doesn't look good. Looks like Safari is taking me places no one would like to go. All right, so I'm going to close this out as I see that the recording's going slower than everything. And let's go into my phone to search an article. Peter, this is time for you to tell us what you saw on Facebook.
Yeah, so the interesting article that I saw, because a lot of people have numerous different opinions of this. Obviously, cell phones in the classroom can be both a good and a bad thing. However, certain school districts are implementing that when a person misuses their phone in class, the teacher takes it, and the school district is actually charging people to get their forms back. Now, the question is that correct? You know, should we do charge people to get their forms back for inaccurate use, or is it considered going over and above, you know, the rights of a teacher, over and above the rights of, you know, access? I mean, that's the question. Personally, in my mind, I personally, being, you know, in the situation I'm in for low income, if I was in that particular situation, I wouldn't want to pay for my phone back. I personally find that it would be really, really stupid. However, it definitely would limit people to using their phones during class. And it would be visible in more noticeable ways if they did, because it would be like going to different places or trying to, you know, hide it and do different things. So it's really a complex thing. I don't support it, but other people do.
True, true. I mean, you don't think they should just take the kids off? No one should have access to a cell phone in school. I mean, I think that you should just hold on till the end of the day. You don't think that's possible anymore?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, most definitely. Well, and the thing is, in my personal opinion, if it wasn't illegal to have signal jammers, I think that it would be perfect to have a small radius signal jammer that would make it incapable for making calls through certain devices. Obviously, you know, through school and for emergencies and things like that would still be able to go through this. But to make initial calls or to use like cellular data, it would render it impossible, you know, which I wouldn't necessarily completely deter students, but it would be a lot more, it would be a lot more of a feature to mainstream and focus students. But yeah, ultimately, if a student can, or, you know, if it's possible, just don't use your phone during classes. But unfortunately, because, you know, as good as technology is, we're getting into laptops and stuff, and that allows for texting on the computer and things like that. So it's a little bit of a battle, but that's why it's an interesting thought is will, like thinking of you, for instance, as a parent, like what would you do if all of a sudden the teacher of your son or daughter all of a sudden says, okay, they were messing around with their phone, you got to pay me $20 to get their phone back. You wouldn't want to do that, at least from my personal standpoint. I mean, obviously you would understand what they're getting at, but it's like, you know, I'm not going to pay that. I should automatically get the phone back. I bought it, you know?
Yeah. So this policy for you, you think is ridiculous, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say ridiculous, but I would say that it's not really going to solve anything. The only thing that I can see this possibly benefiting is that if they were to implement this, they would be able to get more income for the school or some particular thing. It's like, you know, when parents use the, you know, swear jars, and then if you say swear, you know, you put money into it and then you use it for some sort of, you know, whatever use. It seems something like that to me. So that would be the only thing I would see really benefiting. I would see kids getting more radical or trying to hide them and things like that. As well as I can see not only kids having issues, but with parents being involved now because it's a financial issue, parents are definitely getting to get involved. It's going to be just that much more of a pain for teachers because teachers are going to be like, well, you know, this is our policy, but then again, they were the ones who took the device. So instead of blaming the school and its policies, they're going to be blaming the teacher specifically.
True. And I mean, and I think the way to patrol this and keep the out of the classroom and then fining, I just think it should have happened a long time ago, Peter. The monitoring of phones. Now at this point, everyone's using a phone all the time. It gets ridiculous to think that you can take it off a kid till the end of the day. I like the idea because I don't think they can handle it, and it's good for the teachers, but it doesn't seem like it's possible to implement this at this point in time anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, and as far as I know, they're the I can't recall specifics. District and state, but the particular ones that were in the article, they were the first of their kind to do this because, you know, obviously implementation and things. I don't know how long it's going to last, but, you know, maybe there is something that we can gain from this. Maybe it isn't a monetary thing. Maybe it's something else that we can do. You know, it's a really good question. But, you know, I will say this. It's, you know, it's not so crazy that it wouldn't work. But, you know, like you said, it's going to be hard to implement and it's going to be hard to regulate.
Regulation's key, and that's if you can't, you can't. All right, so let's go to the last topic. I do have one more topic to go with, and I was kind of a star on the news. And we didn't expect this. We found out there's mold problems in three of my kids' school. Two of my kids go to this school, and in Pine Ridge School District, they're the one's in middle school, the other one's at Eden Hall. And then the other one is in this smaller elementary school. Well, they found mold. So they have when they're fixing the mold, they put them in makeshift classroom inside where my other daughter goes to school, Eden Hall. So they put them in the auditorium. They put my son who's in kindergarten in a broom closet. Well, it's really a music room, but my wife brought broom closet and all these different things. And I was the kind of person that is like, okay, I don't know. This is going to disrupt the learning environment, but there's nothing else they could do. Could they have had a better contingency plan?
Yeah.
I think they should have rented trailers for 2 weeks, not kept them out of that environment. If the school is where the mold is, then they still have the cafeteria. They still have lockers. They could put them in trailers. Why disrupt another school environment, the gym, the auditorium, just for 1 week or a week and a half of being in a classroom, Peter? Your response.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So, like, because I could definitely relate is that when you have, like, a massive change, for instance, this, where the classes are going to be disrupted, environment is one of those major things. So, I mean, if we switch to a different classroom, you know, or, you know, classes are disrupted and, you know, you kind of have to go through a different game plan, it's really a huge change, not only for teachers, but it can be for students, too, particularly at the younger age, you know, when they say a new, you know, well, maybe not a new room, but, you know, for instance, being taught somewhere different, you know, there's some, you know, distraction and some new, you know, area kind of exploration. And there's a lot of different things that could go on. And it's a really difficult thing is to say what to do for that. But I guess, even though they didn't have a particular plan B,
they didn't have any plan. They decided they came up with this goofy makeshift one instead of bringing trailers in and then you don't disrupt and change the environment somewhere else. So your first days of school are in another school building, and then the kids are like having another first days of school again. And they spent all this time putting different chairs and tables and materials. I don't like it. And I didn't like it from the beginning. And so I would have gone with trailers or not start school for 2 weeks, just that school, and make the state just wave it saying, well, we understood what happened. They don't have to go. They can finish school with the rest of the kids. I don't know. I think it's very hard. My son, whose first days of kindergarten are going to be in one school, and then they're going to move him to another school in a week.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is that it really, I mean, I'm not really, you know, for, you know, the cancellation of school, but ultimately if it would work out better, like if the environment seems to be that it would work out better, then, you know, maybe say, you know, hey, it's our screw up. We had to take responsibility for it and just slightly adjust things. Because, I mean, in theory, like let's say if we cut out that initial week, that would just be, in theory, the question is would you be you know, the classes that you had for that week, would they be all of a sudden accelerated to meet up with the class students that are currently going on? Or is it going to be like an added extra week onto the end of the last semester or year? That's the question.
Yeah. I'm laughing at this because here's the reason I just said this, is that for local people out there, I was on Channel 11. I did not dress my very best. I show up to school when they get there, drop off, check out the kids' new building. We walk out, Channel 11 comes in and interviews my wife and I. My wife for 2 years, I thought maybe the soundbite, I was interviewed last year on Channel 11, they cut my whole thing off. So they interviewed me first and they cut most of my points out, only positive. First, I said, yeah, I think they're doing a great job, the teachers. then, but we, and then I went into the process, but I want to know why. And then they cut it. They didn't let me explain. Well, it's going to be very hard for these kids to learn in an auditorium, in a classroom, that, and it's so hard for kids to transition back. But hey, that's not a quick soundbite on Channel 11. Well, at least Channel 11 didn't cut me completely. But isn't it interesting the news chooses what they want to put on? Don't they? It's but
yeah.
So I'll have to find that video and post it at one point. But I look kind of scary looking.
Yeah.
Did not shave. Went out there and didn't even mention I had an education talk show. But I thought, hey, then they cut me completely, because when I told that lady I'm on an education show, I got completely off the back to school segment last year. So I'm glad I didn't tell people what I am, because then people don't want to put me on. Mm-hmm. For example, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. They don't want WRCT's Total Education Hour at this podcasting expo in Pittsburgh. Are you kidding me? You don't want me on the table to represent?
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous. So that's the thing. You tell people really what you're doing. A lot of times jealousy, Peter, and it doesn't happen. So I didn't bring up I have an education show, the Total Education Hour, because then they'd say, oh, you're trying to promote yourself. But they put me on the air.
Oh.
And that's good.
Oh, wow.
At least I didn't get cut.
Yeah.
My wife's been on for two straight years. But this one was definitely impromptu. So imagine them putting the camera on your face and saying that. But here's the thing, a power television. You think, oh, I was on TV, right, Peter? My phone would be ringing off the hook. People would be walking and, you know, putting things on my Facebook page saying, I saw you on television. Nothing. Nada. Zip. Maybe Jason would come in and laugh. Nothing, nada, zip. What does that tell you?
Mm.
No one watches the news anymore.
Yeah.
Except if you're 75 or older. No one listens to the radio anymore.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
In this world, we're all, you know, at least with the more technology, we're in quick consumable bites of content, and people look at the news and they're like, well, for one, is it long? For two, it's the news. And for three, where can I get it really quickly in the morning or afternoon so I don't have to watch through the whole entire thing?
So, but here's the funny thing is,
you know,
no one, the trends of the world, the trends of the world are people don't read books anymore and people don't listen to the radio. Yet everyone wants to have their own radio show and everyone wants to write a book. Go figure. Maybe the people that want to write books and write radio, they need to all listen to each other's stuff, and then they all become very successful. Instead, they just listen to themselves, and that's it, and then no one grows. But that's the funny thing. The growth of areas that no one really pays attention to anymore, crazy, 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 crazy.
Yep.
So my point, and this is the explanation that got cut out, thanks, Channel 11, I brought up first and said, yes, and I want to know now. I want to know, did they tell you? No, I said, no, they have not. Then I mentioned, the concern I have is that if you're going to have these kids in these makeshift classrooms, it's very hard to get learning to go on when you have no walls and you have six different second grades. Kindergarten was great. The kindergarten classroom looked great because there was no interruptions. But six first grade, second grades in one building, it doesn't cut the mustard, in my opinion. Then I brought up, it's gonna be very hard for young kids to transition twice, to have already they gotten used to this new in school environment and then they're gonna be placed into a back to their old school environment, and that's gonna be a challenge for these kiddos as well. So my point, get the trailers. There could have been a flood. All that stuff was not explained on Channel 11. Thank you, Channel 11. Maybe next time I'll be like, everything's so great. The teachers are doing such a great job. Hi, everyone on Channel 11. Are you kidding me? Oh, so you don't cut me, Channel 11. You don't cut me because I got the last laugh. All right. So good talking to Peter. We'll talk next week. And shout out to everyone in the world. Take care. And we'll talk next week, Peter. All right.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. Okay. Bye. All right. That's the Total Education Hour. Why did you cut me, Channel 11? You cut me, man. You cut me. What are you cutting me for? I believe in you. All right, guys. I'll talk to you next week. Good day, everyone.
You've been listening. You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director at pa@wrct.org or by calling 412-621-0728.